Your headlines: Israeli forces once again kill Gazans waiting for aid trucks as the regime's indiscriminate attacks claim more civilian lives across the blockaded territory. A UN expert says Israel has launched a starvation campaign against the Palestinians in Gaza by destroying the territory's food system. And the Islamic resistance in Iraq targets Israel's military barracks at Rosh Pina Airport in the north of the occupied territories in support of Gaza. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us. Now it's over 5 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, and the regime's indiscriminate attacks keep claiming more civilian lives. In one of the latest attacks, at least 10 Palestinians were massacred and several others wounded after Israeli forces bombed two houses in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Most of the victims were women and children. Separately, at least two people were killed and dozens injured, some critically, when Israeli forces fired at aid seekers at Al-Nabulsi and Al-Kuwait roundabouts in Gaza City. Meanwhile, at least one civilian was killed and three others injured by Israeli bombing of a house in Jabalia, north of Gaza. The Israeli genocide has so far killed 30,800 Palestinians, mostly women and children. Thousands of others have also went missing and are feared to be dead. Israel has largely destroyed vital civilian infrastructure in the Gaza Strip as the months-long war on the besieged territory rages on. Now, with the collapse of basic urban services, fears are growing of the spread of deadly diseases and epidemics amongst the local Palestinians. Moti Abu Musabbeh has more from Deir al-Balah.
War on Gaza continues unabated. Israel is pressing ahead with its systematic move to dehumanize the entire population of the Gaza Strip and destroy all aspects of life in the besieged territory. Piles of rubbish and solid waste are now a normal scene in Gaza's streets after Israeli forces targeted all parts of civil life in Gaza, including the municipalities, where dozens of the crews were killed. Waste storages and all related equipment, including waste collection vehicles, were also destroyed in the war and completely paralyzed.
Israeli forces targeted several vehicles used to remove the rubbish, as you can see over there. This left us paralyzed in handling the tremendous amounts of the rubbish left by the displaced people crammed in the central area. We demand that all international bodies help by providing us with the needed equipment and vehicles.
Not only did the deliberate Israeli attacks against the municipalities cause this crisis, but Israeli prevention of delivery of fuel needed to operate the vehicles and equipment worsened the problem. This caused rubbish and wastes to pile up on the streets and in shelters.
This is a big problem we have been suffering from since the beginning of the war on Gaza. The rubbish is scattered everywhere in the vicinity of the hospital, which causes a lot of diseases for people, particularly the children.
Infectious diseases are ravaging Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as the health system collapsed by the war. And dire conditions and the scarcity of food and clean water have set off a public health crisis. The Gaza Health Ministry, alongside many international organizations, has called for an end to the catastrophe that is looming in terms of the infectious diseases that began to spread on a wide scale among the displaced Palestinians. Hundreds of thousands of those people, mostly women and children, were now diagnosed with contagious diseases like hepatitis and intestinal diseases.
More than 150 days of this war led to mass displacement of the people who crammed in the evacuation centers without having a real access to the hygiene and cleanliness. This caused a lot of infectious diseases, particularly among the children. Needless to mention the severe shortage of the medical supplies and assistance amid the overwhelming number of injuries inflicted by the Israeli attacks.
Months-long incessant Israeli bombardments have put the vast majority of the health facilities out of service. This as limited sanitation facilities and overcrowding shelters are causing the spread of disease and keeping Gaza from recovering. It's another dark side of the deep catastrophe that still afflicts the Palestinian people as a result of the ongoing apocalyptic Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. While the outcries of the Palestinian civilians are still unanswered and muted by the American veto. But the central area of Gaza Strip.
A UN expert says Israel is destroying Gaza's food system as part of the regime's broader starvation campaign in its genocidal war on the blockaded territory. Michael Fakhry, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, was addressing the Human Rights Council. He said destroying Gaza's food system runs along with Israel's restrictions on humanitarian aid delivery into the territory. Fakhry said Israel has mounted a starvation campaign by even targeting small-scale fishermen, destroying around 80% of Gaza's fishing sector. Meanwhile, a report by rights group ActionAid International says women in Gaza are giving birth to stillborn babies due to malnutrition and the collapse of humanitarian operations. It said many children have also died in hospitals due to malnutrition. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says Israel has thwarted all efforts made by mediators to broker a ceasefire deal in Gaza before the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. We discussed this issue with our guests in our news review program. And now it's time for the news review section, where we delve deeper into one of the day's top stories. So stay tuned. Now, the Hamas resistance movement says Israel has thwarted all efforts by mediators to reach a ceasefire agreement in the Gaza Strip. A senior Hamas official said Israel has rejected to end this onslaught on the besieged strip, ensure aid entrance, and the return of displaced Palestinian people. The Hamas delegation has left Cairo without achieving a breakthrough. Hamas says the talks are set to resume next week. Envoys from the US, Qatar and Hamas were involved in talks for a ceasefire agreement. The parties are scrambling to reach an agreement before the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which begins on March the 10th. Now, to talk more on this, we are joined by Mr. Theo West, geopolitical analyst from Dallas, Texas, and also Mr. John Andrew Murphy, political commentator from Coates Square, Pennsylvania. Gentlemen, thank you. And now, starting with you, Mr. West, the ceasefire talks have stalled. Hamas is blaming the Israeli regime for that. Obviously, we know that the Palestinians want a permanent ceasefire. But on the other side, Israel and their ally, the U.S., are looking for a temporary truce. So, Mr. West, why is that? Why is that the case?
I think first we have to put this within a historical context, and then we can better understand the context as it is right now. And historically, I would say that, for example, in 2011, the Obama administration lied, claiming that Libya's Gaddafi was bombing peaceful protesters, and he used that lie as a pretext for NATO to bomb Libya and also to arm terrorists in Libya. Today, what we see, it's undeniable, we see mass murder in Gaza, but no military effort by the Americans and the Europeans to end this under humanitarian grounds, which is what they used to invade Libya in 2011. They used that. So this humanitarian ground, they use it to carry out military action against Libya. The difference between Gaza and Libya is not only hypocrisy, but it is also criminal, because you've got over 30,000 people who have been killed there already. And I would also like to say that today, Anwar Ibrahim, who's the Prime Minister of Malaysia, he correctly points out the hypocrisy of the United States in its condemnation of Putin's military action in Ukraine, while not condemning Netanyahu's military actions in Gaza, targeting civilians. Putin is not targeting civilians. Netanyahu is targeting civilians. The Zionist regime has slaughtered more than 30,000 Palestinians. Most of them are women and children. This has been done with American assistance and American weaponry. The American and Israeli leadership's main talking point for a ceasefire is that the Palestinians turn over all Israeli prisoners of war. I don't call them hostages. These are prisoners of war. This has been a war that's been going on for decades. This is not acceptable to the Palestinians. After the prisoners of war are released, let's say that they release all these prisoners of war, Israeli prisoners of war, Netanyahu will continue with the genocide, and he will continue with the war crimes in Gaza. Palestinians, they must be allowed food, water, medicine, shelter, and other supplies. And the Israeli regime must not be the administrator of any of this aid to the Palestinians. Finally, also, Israeli troops, they must not occupy any parts of Gaza, from the northernmost area to the southernmost area of Gaza, and all the way, including the eastern corridor. And I'd also like to add that the United States, who is supporting this genocide, they are now talking about setting up a port area on the Mediterranean from which to provide food and aid to the Palestinian people. You have the eastern border of Gaza. You have the northern border of Gaza. You have the southern border of Gaza. The Israelis are blocking aid to men, women, and children. This is genocide.
Mr. Murphy, do you think they are looking for only a temporary ceasefire so the captives are released so they can relieve some of the public pressure and then they can continue with the onslaught without the fear of killing more of their own people? With that being said, Mr. Murphy, your thought on this as well? Some are saying that the Israeli regime doesn't even care about the captives.
Sure. A temporary ceasefire during Ramadan would simply be exploited by the United States and the Zionist entity to bypass a complete aggression on the Gaza Strip. Let's also keep, so what the Zionist entity has done is carefully construct a catch-22. Hamas knows that it can't release its hostages without a ceasefire because the hostages are spread across a wide area. And then Israel, the Zionist entity, comes back and says, oh, well, there will be no ceasefire until you release them. So we have a catch-22. There's something else that is troubling me when I hear over and over 30,000 dead. I live near Philadelphia. I was born and raised in Philadelphia. It's about 50 miles from here. Philadelphia is about the same size as the Gaza Strip. There's 1.5 million people living in Philadelphia. And I'm trying to imagine what would happen in Philadelphia if it were hit by 65,000 bombs, if tanks and artillery had been opened fire on it in the past several months, if snipers had been firing on the population, if the hospitals had been destroyed, the churches had been destroyed, and the people had been deprived of food, water, health care. So we got to keep in mind that we're talking catastrophic numbers. We're talking Holocaust here. And we're not talking war.
On that note, I would like to thank our guest, Mr. Theo West, geopolitical analyst from Dallas, Texas, and also Mr. John Andrew Murphy, political commentator from Coatesville, Pennsylvania. Gentlemen, thank you for being on the news review section. And with that, we come to the end of this news review section. Thank you for listening. Palestinian women in Gaza face death and destruction as the world marks International Women's Day. Now, Gaza's government media office says Israel has killed nearly 9,000 women during its genocidal war on the territory. In a statement, the media office said the regime's attacks have also injured 23,000 women and displaced over 500,000. It said the Palestinian women continue to suffer from killings, injuries, displacements, detentions, and torture. The media office slammed the international community for merely watching as the regime commits grave atrocities against Gazans. It said 60,000 pregnant women live under extremely difficult conditions in Gaza, lacking the most basic healthcare requirements. The statement urged the world to take steps to end the Israeli occupation and support the rights and needs of Palestinian women. A new report says a Reuters journalist who died in southern Lebanon last October was killed after an Israeli tank fired shells at a clearly identified group of journalists. The report says after the shelling, the regime's tank crew likely opened heavy machine gun fire at journalists, wounding six others. One of the journalists later had to have a leg amputated. The report said journalists were fired upon for about 2 minutes. Separate investigative reporters had reached similar conclusions in the past. News outlets and rights groups say the report suggests a deliberate attack on journalists that amounts to a war crime on the part of the Israeli forces. According to Palestinian media, the regime has killed more than 130 journalists and media workers since its genocidal war on Gaza started last October. The Islamic resistance in Iraq has launched a new attack against Israeli targets in the occupied territories in support of the Palestinian people in Gaza. The Iraqi resistance says it has carried out a drone attack on military barrack at Rosh Pina Airport in the northern part of the occupied territories. This after the Iraqi resistance targeted Israel's Kiryat Shemona Airport with a drone. Earlier this week, the resistance targeted the Israeli port of Haifa twice, hitting a chemical facility and a power station at its airport with drones. The Islamic resistance in Iraq says it will continue its attacks on Israeli targets until the regime stops its genocide in Gaza. It has also struck major American military bases in Syria and Iraq amid anger over the U.S. support for Israel's onslaught on Gaza. An international congress is underway in the Iranian capital Tehran, focusing on the occupation of Palestine. Legal experts participating in this event have been discussing the violation of international humanitarian law in Gaza. Gisu Misha Ahmadi has the details.
Discussing legal avenues to stop the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Adamant about finding a way to end the catastrophe in Gaza, Iran's Red Crescent Society brought together legal experts from 21 countries in Tehran to attend an international congress on the occupation of Palestine, with a special focus on Israeli violations of international humanitarian law.
Today, what's happening in Gaza is beyond words. Terms such as war crimes are simply not enough to describe what the Zionists are doing. It's been over 5 months, and more than 30,000 people have been killed. The least Muslim countries can do is completely cut off their ties and trade with the Zionists.
A stance that was reiterated by every single speaker of the conference.
Legal experts have been voicing their support for Palestinians. What is happening in Gaza is against everything we know to be the pillars of modern society, violating the Geneva Convention, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and international humanitarian law.
The Universal Declaration of Human Rights and international humanitarian law clearly gives the right to Palestinians. The Israelis are violating the Geneva Convention day in and day out. They should be held accountable for all these crimes in an international tribunal.
We're very clear that the United Nations, the Security Council, at this stance is politicized.
So far, calls to allow food distribution in Gaza have been denied, and there have been numerous warnings against a looming famine. With more than 40,000 online participants from different cities in Iran and around the world, the call for change can be clearly heard.
The participants are demanding accountability. They say today the same countries that wrote the Geneva Convention and the international organizations that claim to be advocates of human rights are silent in the face of Israeli atrocities in Gaza. However, with public opinion shifting against the Israeli regime, this conference could be a first step in creating the kind of change the international community wants to see. Gizum Shahmadi, Tehran.
And with that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for being with us. Take care and bye-bye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters. 9,650 kHz every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, Our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The Limelight.
Amid warnings by the United Nations of a looming famine in the blockaded Gaza Strip, which the United States enabled for nearly 5 months, Washington has now embarked on a new public relations campaign. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, three American military aircraft airdropped about 36,000 food parcels over a tiny region with a 2.3 million population, which has been reeling under U.S.-backed Israeli regime bombing since October 7th. Unsurprisingly, U.S. military cameras were on standby to capture the moment when the aid was being loaded into the aircraft at night and the cargo later dropped from the sky. Many rightly saw it as a photo opportunity to mitigate domestic and international public anger for Washington's direct complicity in the worst humanitarian catastrophe currently unfolding in Gaza. The flashlights were switched on to add that extra dramatic Hollywood-style war element to the whole charade, with troops loading the cargo on a C-130 Hercules military jet in the middle of the night. The U.S. Central Command published the videos for global news media outlets, many of whom played along by broadcasting the warlike footage. The Biden administration tried to get a message across that the U.S. military is helping to ease the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza while being the mastermind and architect of their colossal tragedy. The U.S. cargo landed along the Gaza coast, some in the sea itself, and for each U.S. food parcel, hundreds of starving and desperate Palestinians rushed to get a hold of it, drawing criticism from aid agencies and rights groups. Tens of thousands of others walked back to their makeshift tents, hungry and traumatized. For 5 months, they have been struggling to survive amid relentless bombings and crippling siege. The U.S. airdrops of food were inefficient because only small amounts of aid can be dropped at a time from a plane in what was a major operation for all the wrong reasons. It is another dark stain in the history books for the United States regime, which has allowed the Zionist regime to kill and starve families instead of applying pressure on Tel Aviv to at least turn the water taps back on. If the White House was serious about helping the starving Palestinians, Biden could ring Tel Aviv and force the regime to open the land crossings to Gaza for real aid to enter, a key demand of UN agencies. However, that is not the case. The United States regime is directly aiding and abetting this genocide. Historically, in cases such as the Second World War, airdrops were used as a last resort. It shouldn't be a last resort for Gaza today, where the large majority of the 2.3 million Palestinians are on the verge of famine or deliberate starvation, while food and water are a few kilometers away. The Biden administration reportedly sent three C-130 Hercules aircraft over Gaza. One military cargo plane holds the equivalent of one truckload of aid. We keep hearing that Gaza needs an estimated 500 trucks of aid every day at minimum. 500 trucks of aid is the pre-war figure that wasn't enough then. The trucks required today to feed the starving people of Gaza is much higher. Yet, 500 trucks are waiting just across the border in Egypt to enter Gaza, and the Zionist regime with America's backing is preventing them from crossing. They are opting instead for airdrops, which may come across as compassionate to some watching on TV, but the reality is it degrades Palestinians who have been devalued as human beings for nearly 5 months now. Rightly so, the U.S. measures have backfired, drawing sharp criticism from aid agencies and rights groups. Medical Aid for Palestinians said in a statement, "Instead of dropping packages from the sky, some of which end up in the sea or outside of Gaza, and which the most vulnerable cannot reach in any case, the U.S., the U.K. and others should ensure that Israel immediately opens all crossings into Gaza for aid and aid workers to assist those in need." The International Rescue Committee said airdrops are not the solution to relieve this suffering and distract time and effort from proven solutions to help at scale. What makes this remarkably shameful for the Biden administration is that not only has the White House enabled the starvation to be used as a weapon of war in Gaza, collective punishment is a war crime, but it is American weapons that have murdered and starved the Palestinians. The Zionist regime war on Gaza is enabled by arms made in the United States, which is pulling the strings in the war on the besieged territory and using its veto power at the UN Security Council to avoid a ceasefire. These airdrops are also inaccurate, as the US military has no control over precisely where the cargo will fall, leaving the dangerously large pallets parachuted off the back of planes to potentially land on a crowd of people in what is a very densely populated strip. And if they land in the sea, there is a serious risk of Israeli regime warships shooting at Palestinians desperate to collect them, with similar deadly incidents happening many times in the recent past. The UN has warned that famine in Gaza is inevitable unless aid deliveries increase significantly, with a quarter of 2.3 million population one step away from starvation. starvation has already started to take the lives of Palestinian children. The World Health Organization data shows at least 10 children have been officially registered in a hospital as having starved to death. Highlighting the crisis in Gaza, a WHO spokesperson said, "The unofficial number can unfortunately be higher. The footage from Gaza looks like a powerful natural disaster has hit the territory, but this is nothing natural. The latest decision by the Biden administration highlights how much of a U.S.-Israeli man-made disaster the Gaza Strip has become. This is despite reports surfacing of Palestinians eating animal feed to survive and children dying from starvation as a result of malnutrition and dehydration."
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Muslim Ladies. Like always, we're here to talk about women's issue. And once more, I have the honor to be your host. Well, this is Asma, and here with me, I have Sister Rehane. Well, actually, she's going to introduce herself pretty much perfectly for you. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome to Muslim Ladies.
Thank you very much, Sister Asma. I'm Rehane Paisapal, and I'm happy to be here with our dear listeners. I hope you have a wonderful day today.
Of course we would have. Since it's all ladies, then it's going to be wonderful. Well, just for the record, she is an Islamic researcher, and she works on ladies' issues and whatever that matters to us as ladies generally. So previously on Muslim Lady, we talked about the history of hijab, and also we talked about why hijab is important. We got through the very aspects of in our religion. Everything is into detailed about hijab because it was the complete religion. It was the religion that was to complete all the other religions. So, of course, all the details must be revealed in this religion, and all the rules must be set out there for all the people to know where to go and how to do in their lives. Then the foundation was set. We talked generally about hijab, but we want to get into more of details and into more of information about hijab, like the things that have been mentioned in the Holy Book of Quran. So one of those things is the fact that women themselves are considered as these delicate creatures who've got a lot of adornment to share with other people, with the universe. So about these adornments, like about their beauties, there is also a verse that tells them to keep their adornments for themselves and do not reveal it aside for the people who are their close circles, like the mahram people, like what we have it in our religion. So let's talk on that as well.
Islam tells women to not show their adornments to non-mahram men. Of course, that means that women are free to not wear hijab in front of the mahram men in their family.
Like their fathers, like their husbands, brothers, yes. Uncles, and...
Yes. The list can be found on the
internet. Yeah.
Other than that, women must keep their beauties for themselves. And this is most beneficial for women themselves. Women are the primary beneficiaries of this. When women freely...
Again, is also mentioned in the Quran as well. It says that they do this and this and this, and this is better for them. This is going to protect themselves from the coming problems and issues.
Exactly. So in society, if women freely show their beauty, I mean, we can see examples of these of this in some societies, Western societies mainly. But when women freely show their beauty to the world without any regards, in the end, it actually hurts themselves. It hurts the foundation of family. When women freely give away their beauty, men have no reason to give anything back to women. I mean, they can freely get whatever they want.
Without any responsibility.
Exactly.
They do not have to put themselves in an entanglement of marriage and problems. And, you know, it has got a lot of responsibilities to go to create a family, to be the responsible man of a family. So if all the women share everything for free without any subscription, so it's pretty much obvious that men would feel free.
Exactly. Like right now, there are many, I see on social media women complaining about men not meeting their standards and the bar being on the ground of women like being impressed by men's behavior. Like even a man opening a door nowadays would impress a woman.
Exactly.
But that is not the standard that Islam wants for women. Islam wants men to be protectors of women. قَوَّامُونَ عَلَى النِّسَاءِ. So they are protectors and providers for women. And in order to somehow create that motivation, women mustn't show their beauty, mustn't give away their beauty for free. So women must observe modesty and they must hide their beauty, and you know, they must say that this is a right that you have to gain to see my beauty.
Let's go for a short break and then we'd come to follow the rest. Welcome back, and thank you for staying with us. Well, this is Muslim Lady. You're listening to Arabic English Radio. I'm Asma, and Sister Hani is here, and we're having quite an interesting topic to discuss about, which is hijab. And of course, we're getting into some details. Like, we came to the point that we should not show our adornments. This is a rule in our religion. And why this rule? Well, simply because to protect us from the problems we already know. I guess there is no one in this entire world who could claim that women would not face any problem if they live their life freely and they dress up the way they like freely, as free as they wish to. But there's no one who could claim that, because even in the Western societies, there are a lot of movies, there are a lot of stories, there are a lot of books based on women harassment, like the way women are being harassed by men just because they look like this, just because they wear this sort of stuff. And even if they don't wear in a specific way, women are unfortunately, the easy targets in society for the sick men, of course.
Of course, that is correct. I actually always like to say that hijab, wearing hijab, comes from a place of love. And that love is towards yourself and towards other women and towards other men as well. So first of all, it comes from a place of love towards yourself, because by wearing the hijab, you announce to the world that I am more than my appearance. I am more than my beauty. I want you to hear what I have to say, know who I am before you see my beauty and before you judge me based on my appearance.
Exactly. So that's the point. I'm a human being. Do not look at me according to my appearance and do not take all these materialistic things about me. When you are going to think of me, of a person I am, try to look beyond my skin, beyond my features as a woman.
And that is what women, Muslim women, announce when they wear the hijab. And another aspect is love towards other women. And I think to explain that, I could just give the example of women having many body image issues nowadays because a lot of women just freely show the way they look, show their beauty to the world. And a woman who maybe is not blessed as much as the other one in terms of beauty might look at that woman, other woman, and say, well, why don't I look like that? And maybe I am worth less than that other woman. It creates many body image issues. So by covering yourself in society, that also eliminates the expectation for women to all be at
the same picture.
Exactly. And to be at the utmost level of beauty. So another woman might feel less pressure to be perfect in terms of their image.
Yeah, that's very true. It just reminds me of peer pressure, like the thing that happens with teenagers. The same thing is happening to all the women in the entire universe. Like, if you look at this fashion industry, it's actually creating a lot of sicknesses to the women from all around the world. Like, the number of women with depression is increasing just because she cannot afford a perfect body, just because she thinks that she is lower than the other women. She feels like she is actually participating in a competition, in an unknown competition, and she knows that she's the loser. So she might go through depression just because other women are so much trying so hard to show this perfect picture, which does not exist in this world, you know? All as human beings, we might try to focus on appearance and we might create such a perfect appearance and body. But unfortunately, what matters is the inside. And all what we see in today's world is that the insides are just going through too much of problems and issues.
Exactly. And unfortunately, the West has somehow went to the opposite direction in terms of solution. And they think that the solution to this problem is to have inclusivity. And so everyone must show what they look like, all body types. But that's just not feasible. That's not doable.
And under the pretext of freedom.
Exactly.
The thing which hurts so much is the fact they call it freedom. This is not freedom. This is actually a propaganda. This is a program you have enacted into the world in order to achieve whatever you want.
Exactly.
If these fashion industries stop working, then a lot of tycoons would go down. A lot of people with a lot of money are going to come down. They're going to be dragged down to the level of ordinary people because, you know, it's an industry. And how does industry work? You have to have people as your wage slaves, and also you have to have some consumers, and these consumers are unfortunately the victimized women.
Exactly. It's and women lose in this game, of course.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It's quite interesting to think about this stuff. Let's go for another break, and then we'd come for the last word of today's episode.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Yes, thank you for staying with us. Well, this is the last part for today's episode. We're still talking about women and how beautifully you just put it. I am wearing hijab because I love myself and because I share this love for other women as well.
Yes, and also for other men.
Yeah.
So the men in society, if I freely show my beauty to the world, to other men, even if they do not have sickness in their heart, a young man going through puberty maybe would, if they look in society and see all these beautiful women, and they don't have the resources to get married, it would be very frustrating for that man. And that man would grow with many
challenges. And go through
challenges.
Too much pressure.
Exactly. Would go through so much pressure and challenges. And by wearing the hijab, I'm also showing compassion to other men in society. Maybe someone is already married, and if I show my beauty freely, that man might lose interest in his wife.
Exactly.
Or
and
maybe,
please do not say that these things are just legends and myth. They are things nobody think about into this world, because these are just old-fashioned sort of thinking. No, it is not. Even we can see in TV series, in movies, the things that they themselves create, the basic thing, trigger, that starts a conflict between a man and a woman is their free relationship with other men and women. If we want to be that perfect human being, perfect, obedient at the service of God, we have to be virtuous. We have to look out for our manner. We have to just be so careful about every single thing we say and we do in society. And again, I have to mention this point. In society, we're responsible toward each other. Like, it's not just I am getting whatever I wish. No, it's you are going to have impact on other people. And in the end, when this world is going to be finished, which is, of course, a fact, and we're not going to stay in here forever, we have to have answers in front of God. So you're going to be questioned. Whatever you do has got to have a logical answer. So, yes, this is all for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
The limelight.
The British government has quietly signed a contract targeting 20% cuts to the number of new education plans for children with special educational needs. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Hundreds of children with special educational needs have been waiting for a year or longer to access support, as local authorities across England buckle under the strain of demands placed on them. Freedom of Information requests found that in some local authorities, children and young people have been waiting more than 2 years to be issued with an education, health and care plan that details the support they require. The Freedom of Information results suggest that across England, More than 20,000 cases were waiting longer than the 20-week limit, and as many as 3,000 for a year or more. Local council leaders say that requests for education, health and care plans have surged in recent years while funding to meet the children's needs has not kept pace. Since 2019, the number of plans issued has risen by 72%, so that in 2023, more than 500,000 children and young people had education, health and care plans. But dedicated funding from central government for special education needs and disabilities has only risen by 42%. Alex Dale, the cabinet member for education at Derbyshire County Council, said, "It's clearly a massive issue and no local authority wants to be in a position where it is going over the statutory time frame or making families wait any longer than they should." Alex Dale, who also chairs the F40 group of local authorities campaigning for fairer education funding, said one of the main reasons behind the delays was the sheer increase in demand. He said, "In my local authority, we've calculated that the number of education, health and care plans we have on our books, if you like, has doubled in the past 7 years, and that's pretty much replicated across the country." Derbyshire is investing a further £1 million to improve its processing of education, health and care plans. But Alex Dale says that £1 million has got to come from the council's own resources, which are very much under pressure anyway. And there's a huge competing demands. It's a real challenge. No one wants to be in a position that we're in at the moment. But I think it's an inevitable consequence of that rise in demand. Even after education, health and care plans have been issued, parents who spoke to the Guardian newspaper described a nightmarish system of appeals and tribunals to obtain support, including a case in York of identical twins whose parents were offered only one place in a special school. Shauna Levin, the chief executive of the Twins Trust charity, said, "Unfortunately, this case is common and similar to others that we've seen. Families with multiples already face significant economic, social and health disadvantage. Issues with school admissions just cause extra stress and extra anxiety for both the parents and the children." Another case involving twins in Guildford, Surrey, highlights the difficulties that parents are facing. David and Louise May have twin sons, one without special needs who is in a mainstream secondary school preparing to take his GCSEs. But his twin brother Jack, diagnosed with autism and ADHD, has been out of full-time education since summer of 2022, despite having an education, health and care plan through Surrey Council. Jack was placed in a mainstream school in year 7, but his struggles made it unsustainable. An initial rejection of a special school place was overturned after Jack's parents appealed. This was followed by the offer of a special school place for children with severe disabilities that was unsuitable. Jack's parents then found him a place at a private school, which the school abruptly ended after the COVID crisis, saying it could not meet his needs. Now they're waiting for the local authority to redraw Jack's education, health and care plan, and are hoping that a place in an appropriate school can be found while Jack receives 12 hours a week of home tuition funded by the local council. The couple have had a continuing struggle with Surrey Council over Jack's education, with David May describing months and months passing without getting responses from the administration. He said, "The problem is, in my opinion, that staff are overworked, underpaid, stressed out, and they can't get enough places. And so there's a massive turnover of staff. How can they place children without enough places?" Munira Wilson, the Liberal Democrat spokesperson on education who raised Jack's case during a parliamentary debate on special needs funding, recently said, "Imagine how devastating it is for parents to see one child thrive while its twin suffers." A spokesperson for the Department of Education claimed the government was committed to improving support. The spokesperson said high-needs funding for children and young people with complex needs will be increasing to a total of over £10.5 billion in 2024-2025, an increase of over 60% since 2019-2020. The website Reddit has also covered the same story and tells us more. The British government has quietly signed a contract targeting 20% cuts to the number of new education plans for children with special educational needs and disabilities to bring down costs. Then Junior Education Minister Claire Coutinho, recently promoted to the Cabinet as Energy Secretary, subsequently told MPs that no targets were in place. The cuts target has emerged as councils across England grapple with huge financial deficits on SEND budgets, caused by a combination of rising demand and long-standing underfunding. Part of the government's response has been the launch of the Delivering Better Value in SEND programme, which supports 55 councils to bring down their large SEND budget deficits through measures such as early intervention and teaching children with special needs in mainstream schools. In June of 2022, the Department for Education signed a £19.5 million contract with consultancy firm Newton Europe to design and develop the Delivering Better Value in SEND programme. The deliverable section of the contract states that it is the intention of the signatories that the 55 councils' budget management plans implemented under the DBV programme will help achieve impacts including reduced cost pressure as a result of reduced growth in the number of education, health and care plans, targeting at least a 20% reduction in new education, health and care plans issued. The contract states that the impacts will be measured by monitoring education, health, care plans' growth rates and the state of councils' education budgets.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.